Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today.
Hi listener, welcome to episode 46 of the podcast. Adrian here from Sofeast, and I'll be joined by our CEO Renaud as ever. This episode marks a year of the podcast, so if you've been listening since the start, that's great and we're so happy, and if you're new to the podcast, a big welcome to you. Now, on to today's topic, which is automation in the factory and whether it's really worth it. So Renaud's feedback here is going to be really helpful because he's been there and done it in China and around Asia, and he's seen good and bad implementations of automation. Manufacturing is definitely going in the direction of more automation. So if we are going to implement it, what are we looking at in terms of costs of machinery over staff over time? And then also, what are some of the best practices that we should be thinking about following if we are going to implement more automation? Well, that's exactly what we're talking about in the episode. So let's get started.
Hi, Renaud. How's it going?
Hey, Adrian. Not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. The sun's shining over here in the UK. And well, it's going a lot better for me than it is for that the captain of the container ship that's currently blocking the Suez Canal.
You think that guy got drunk or what happened?
Well, they said it was a gust of wind. It must be a pretty
big
gust of wind.
But
as if the logistics situation in the world can't be bad enough, and then this happens.
Yeah. Oh, it's, how do you call it? Throwing oil on the fire, right?
Just a little bit.
Yes. And same thing with the chips, the microprocessors.
And
factory that burned in Japan just a few days ago. It's going to make things even tighter for Toyota and some others.
Right. Oh, yeah, starting 2021 off with the way we want to go on, not go on.
Yeah. Nice bang. Yeah.
Mm. Well, it's good to be back after your last week when you were talking about manufacturing in Vietnam with Simon over there in Hanoi. And that was a really cool episode. But I'm back in the hot seat this week. And the question I'm asking is investing in process automation in the factory actually worth it? And a good way to kick off this topic is to just discuss and explain the trend of process automation and what it is, why people are doing it a little bit more, and then get into whether it's actually worth it and in terms of cost savings and the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, automation, process automation in manufacturing can be summed up very, in a very simple way. You remove labor and you use hardware and software instead, right? So you invest in equipment or you lease equipment, and that equipment requires less labor than the process was requiring so far for the same output. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the idea, and in some cases it's a very good idea to automate processes. I mean, you know, but it's not black or white. It's not every time you can automate, do automate. That's a very dangerous kind of logic. So it's an interesting topic, but at the same time, there's so much fantasy about it, and on the manufacturer side as well as on the buyer side, right? So on the buyer side, I hear people say, oh yeah, well, you know, if they automate, it means, you know, their costs are lower and quality is much more consistent and okay, oh, that's great. And on the manufacturer side, we hear, especially in China, damn, if we could just do without all these people, you know, that we have to manage and we have to hire them and we have to pay them and they are slow and we have to push them, and you know, it would be great. And then if we had some big equipment, like really high-tech stuff, it would impress the customers and we would get a lot more customers because we're more unique, you know. So there's a ton of fantasy about that, and really, you know, what what we want to do today in this episode is cut through the crap. It's not that simple. It's not that simple.
It sounds kind of simple, but there's always a but, isn't there? I suppose as China transitions into increasingly focusing on higher tech manufacturing, the temptation to rush into automation is quite strong for a lot of Chinese manufacturers.
Oh, yeah. And it's not just the manufacturers, it's their government too. Remember China, Made in China 2025 and so on. They want to automate, and they actually want to make the automated equipment and go higher tech as much as they can, and start also to sell that high precision, high speed, high whatever you want, high performance, fully automated equipment to other factories around the world, and really go up the value chain, basically. That's their one of their goals. So just like they did with high-speed train, they started to, you know, get inspiration from the Japanese train systems and so on, and they learned. Sometimes they learned the very hard way, but they learned over time, and then they really, you know, redeveloped the technology, and they put a lot of engineering hours into that. And a lot of investments, and they've just made so much of it that they're quite competitive, and they're quite competitive on the international markets, and that's what they want to emulate. So the government has been pushing the manufacturers also to automate, but also at the same time they don't want too many workers to be out of a job. So you know, it's they've been giving some subsidies, financial help to manufacturers that had some R&D projects for some, you know, they did some automation and so on. That started probably that was big about maybe five years ago. There was a lot of money to get from the government, and there still is. So, basically, as they want to go up the value chain, you know, they all think that they have to automate their processes, which is partly true, but very often they approach it in the wrong way without taking all the factors into analysis.
By factors, you're talking about the positives and the negatives of such automation, right? Okay.
Yes.
So let's talk about some of these benefits and downsides then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So let's start with the benefits. And the first one that everybody thinks of is, you know, the lower cost. So let's say I'm the GM of a factory in Shenzhen, and wow, the labor cost is going up, you know, the wages are going up, and we have to pay for social security. Now we really cannot play any games that easily now, and so on and so forth. And, you know, and then I get a catalog, you know, from an automation supplier, and I say, yeah, look, I mean, what are you doing? There's a lot of other companies that do that, and that just automated it, and we have just the machine for you. Oh, great. How much does it cost? Okay. And then they help you with the calculation of the return on investment. You know, they say, well, you know, this machine can replace 10 or 11 operators that you're doing right now, and it will have the same output. Now you have to put 2 million RMB down. And yes, it will consume some electricity and everything. So let's say 100,000 RMB a year. But, you know, you pay one time for this 2 million RMB, but all these operators, maybe they cost you more than 500,000 RMB every year, right? Mm. When you add everything up, salary, social security, and so on. So you do the return investment calculation, and it's like, wow, yeah, great. You know, basically by year four, I kind of break even. And then after that, it's like a huge benefit straight into my pocket. The difference is huge. I just need to put the cash out now, right? And maybe I can work with some financing and also get a little bit of subsidy from the government and everything. Okay, great. You know, I really want to do it, right? And of course, the automation supplier will say that the machine can be used, oh, at least 10 years, no problem. You know, as long as you do some maintenance like this, you know, and this is the cost, that's fine. You know, you can count on it at least 10 years. So yeah, okay, well, that is much cheaper, right? Also, second benefit is in China, they always like to blame people. I mean, not always, but it's like so common. And by the way, it's not just China, but it's so prevalent. And also all the buyers heard the excuse, you know, why do we have so many defects here? Hey, you know, this is made by hand. You can't really, you know, it doesn't come out of a machine, you know, and they say that like, if it came out of a machine, it would be 100% perfect every time, you know, which we'll get to that later. But okay, so let's say that you have, you know, 10 operators plus maybe on average one to do the rework, you know, you have to factor that cost in. And of course, if you listen to the supplier of the automation, they will say, hey, yeah, it's, you know, no more rework, no more quality issues. Oh, really? Okay, great. So no more rework. I'm really going to save a lot of money, right? And of course, you don't need to have maybe an HR manager anymore. Once you have done that to all of your lines and you went through from 200 people to 30 people, right? Mm. Great. So, you know, fewer layers of management also, right? Oh, that's much cheaper, right? If you really add up all of the costs of all these people, you know, these damn humans that we hate, you know, that's great. Okay. Now, the problem is it's not that simple. It's not that simple. First, of course, there's an interest on capital, right? And it's not that cheap for companies in mainland China. Now, for those from Taiwan will have a much lower cost of capital if there is money in Taiwan. But those in China can expect, you know, 8%, 10%. Mm. It's not that cheap, right? Then the second thing is there's fewer people, right? But it's not the same kind of people. So you had 10 or 11 operators, right? An operator in Shenzhen, yeah, let's say 5,000-6,000 RMB, or if it's maybe in electronics, you know, maybe 7,000-7,500, maybe all, you know, the salary plus social insurance. Okay, that's great. But now, wait a minute. you need some engineers who know how to set the machine, and you need some good maintenance technicians or engineers to look after it, right? And that's, you know, it doesn't come cheap.
Right.
It's often the cost of several operators. And also, well, you still need some logistical work around the machine. You don't just automate, get rid of the operators and get rid of all of their labor. You know, there's still some tasks that you need to do, right? So that makes the machine still much cheaper probably, but with less of a difference.
Yeah, it's eating into that difference quite a bit by now.
Right. Mm. Then, hey, you don't get the machine and you get it to work right away. It's not that simple, right? And actually some of them, they actually never get to work properly. I mean, I've been to factories where they have, you know, oh, the automated welding machine, you know, oh, it's a great machine, but we never got it to work. Yeah, we keep it here in the corner because we paid for it. So who knows, you know, or sometimes it's sneaky because you get it to work, but because the power in China doesn't come from nuclear, it comes from coal and some other sources. Well, the energy is not what they call not clean, meaning that there's some variations, and sometimes they can actually fry some of the components in the machine. So sometimes the machine was working fine, let's say in France, and then it goes to China, and then nobody knows why, but you know, after 2 or 3 months, it just stops working, right? So there's a lot of issues like that. But I'm not gonna go through the worst case scenario here. I'm just gonna say, you know, it takes time to set it up. It takes time to make sure it works consistently. You're not gonna fire the operators right away. You need them to work in parallel to the machine, and then once the machine can be counted on, then you can, you know, redeploy them or whatever, or fire them. So you still need to keep the operators for some time. Then maintenance.
Mm.
The higher tech you go, the more maintenance you will need. And what does that mean? First, you need some really highly skilled people. You know, if we're talking high-tech machinery, that will even do the automatic loading and everything. That is not cheap. So you need probably an engineer level person, and you need to train that person. Also, the training often doesn't come cheap. Sometimes you have to fly that person to Germany or to wherever to get the training. Yeah. Also, right? So it doesn't come cheap. Then replacement parts. So the goal of maintenance, good maintenance, has an objective. It is to keep the machine in the same condition as when it was new, basically, or as close as possible. So as some parts of the machine get aged, you have to replace them. And hopefully you replace them before they break or before they cause any issues. This has to be factored in. And well, if you buy it from, say, Switzerland, the equipment manufacturer will have technical sheets and everything that explain this, that tell you this is the mean time to failure and mean time between failure and so on and so forth. And you know how to do preventive maintenance to prevent unplanned downtime. So, but if you buy it from a small or mid-sized equipment supplier in Dongguan, are they going to tell you everything, or are they going to be, let's say, a little bit optimistic about the fully loaded costs of keeping that machine running? I'm going to tell you, they're going to be optimistic. So they're not going to tell you everything.
Yeah.
So you probably need to buy more parts than you think. Also, the machine will be down sometime. I mean, there is downtime, planned or unplanned. And unfortunately, you cannot rule out that you have an unplanned downtime. The machine just, you know, something broke or whatever. Machine is down. And this sometimes happens when you need it the most. So that can actually be very expensive at the last minute. Wow, now we have to expedite the parts, send them by air and everything. That's extremely costly. Yeah. And the most costly of all is that a machine might still be running, but with something off, you know, a tool half broken or some settings off or whatever. And people are not noticing it and stopping it right away. And the problem with these highly automated pieces of equipment is that they can process a lot of parts very fast, very often. So if you let it work for 1 hour, they might crank out, you know, 5,000 parts that are not good. Big problem, right? So when you factor in all of these, relatively hidden downsides of automation, big problem. And actually, it often negates most of the savings if you do not know how to do it well. So there's really an art and a science to maintenance. It's really, people have to learn it. Your staff has to learn how to work with more complex equipment. If you jump too fast, they're not going to be able to learn fast enough, and you're going to have all kinds of problems, and you're going to be extremely costly. If you take time You go one step at a time, you know, then, which is possible very often with a lot of operations, then people learn over time, you know, and then maybe you hire one specialist for this or that, but your maintenance technicians might become good. And also, you know, some of the line leaders, maybe also some of the operators, right? So some companies will manage that well and keep the cost relatively low, and some others will manage it poorly and their cost will go through the roof. That's really the truth about that. Now, there's some other issues that people don't think of. You know, what are customers really going to think about that? Well, maybe when they visit it, they will be, wow, you know, amazing. They have great equipment. But the problem is, when you had a lot of manual operations, you could do high mix, low volume kind of work. You were quite flexible, right? Now, all of a sudden, you automate everything and you get rid of people and you have a setup of 1 hour, you know, but actually the full changeover is a couple of hours. And it's the person who does that is not always available and this and that. And everything is optimized for high quantity orders. But what's going to happen? You know, you're going to have to turn away a lot of orders. And the reality is that if you can only go in for the high order, high quantity orders, the margin very often is not that good because the buyer can get a lot of good quotes from a lot of companies. So you get to be much more competitive, right? Mm. And you lose the smaller orders, the smaller customers that maybe were the only source of profit for your company. So some factories really shot themselves in the foot really bad when they automated, right? It might be positive on the other hand if the lead times go down, okay? However, in reality, so the theory is you automate things and then their cycle time is pretty short. And with that machine, we can just, you know, make all of these parts in one day. It's so fast, you know. Okay, great. But the reality really that we've observed is that in most cases where when that happens, they just make a ton of inventory, a ton of work in process, and they don't take advantage of it. And sometimes it even makes everything slower. You know, longer lead times. So, you know, now let's say you're roughly on par between the cost of the machine and the cost of keeping the people. Now, you're budgeted for 10 years, but hey, maybe the lifetime of the machine is not 10 years because maybe you maintain it pretty bad. And after 4 or 5 years, it becomes so unreliable, you have to switch to another one. That's a big problem. That's a lot of money wasted. Or maybe it just becomes obsolete for some reason. Mm. Maybe there's a new technology that everybody wants, or who knows, right? But if you keep the labor, you can actually pivot much more easily, right? So that's sort of an overview of the pros and cons. The pros, everybody has that has them in mind. And all of the automation suppliers are very quick to tell you about that, but there's a lot of drawbacks too.
Right. Yeah. I think listening to these examples, it almost sounds like investing all of that money in the equipment isn't even worth it.
Well, sometimes it is, sometimes it is not. That's really the key. You need to do a financial model. And, you know, put the numbers there and then start to think what is going to make or break it, right? So what do the best companies do? What do the best manufacturers do? If you look at, for example, Toyota, they will say that some operations they would try to automate without looking at the return on investment, you know. The operations are dangerous, you know, just you know, don't go into that. You know, get the people out of it, automate if possible, because safety is a non-negotiable. Now, of course, use creativity to find ways to do it with the most simple kind of mechanisms or whatever, you know, the most simple kind of approach, but remove the people from that operation or cut that operation entirely if possible. Now, of course, that's always the best. They have something they call the 3Ds. I forgot about it, actually. It's dull, dangerous, and I forgot. And dirty, right? So dirty or dangerous, okay, pull the people out of it. Dull, it's not exactly just boring. It what they mean is really like super repetitive, you know, low need for people to think and improve and things like that. So there are some kind of principles, right? That's the Toyota approach. You know, if it's dirty, dangerous, or dull, get people out of it. Okay. Then there is, you know, the right approach and the wrong approach to automation. And I alluded to that already. If you want to jump too fast through the steps of automation, you're going to have trouble, as I said, and in good part because of maintenance. Your people will be unable to help you maintain it, right? Mm. So you have to go step by step. And actually before that, now what the best companies do, they have process engineers, industrial engineers, you know, they actually look at the operations that the humans are doing and they say, okay, how much wasted motion and everything is there right here? You know, how can we change the layout, for example, by getting closer to one piece flow and so on? How can we, you know, get better fixtures in place, better ergonomics, and maybe even re-engineer the design of the product so that it's easier, you know, instead of screwing, maybe we just clip and that's it. It's much faster, you know. Plus, we don't have to worry about the torque of the screwdrivers and everything and all the process control that's associated. So people really try to re-engineer the product and the process to get rid of all the wasted motion. And when you go to most factories in China, in Vietnam, in India, and you actually count, okay, every minute, this operator, how many seconds are they actually transforming the piece? And you would say maybe 40 or 50 seconds. No, that's like world class. Mm-hmm. They are more like 6 seconds per minute, which is 10%, right? It's something that David Collins from CMC always refers to. And that's really probably the best way to look at it and point to the waste, because people have to extend their arm, grab the part, you know, position it. And after the cycling or the transformation is done, they have to grab it again and then put it somewhere else, pile it up nicely maybe, and then sometimes they have to go and pick up some parts you know. So when you add everything up, it's the non-transformation time is actually, you know, sometimes around 90%. So first thing you do is you attack that. You try to get rid of all this non-value added work. And in a lot of cases, you can cut it by 30%, 50% in a lot of operations or sometimes higher than that, right? Then once you've tried to work on that, make the people actually more efficient, then you think, okay, how to semi-automate some of the operations. Okay, so if the person has to grab the part, has to position it, has to do the work maybe with the other hand, then they have to put their tool down and grab the part again and push it somewhere. That's very, very manual, right? Now, if they have a very nice fixture, for example, then positioning it is much faster. Okay, bing, you already save some time. Then if the tool itself could be maybe with, with some power, you know, have the action itself, maybe it would be even faster. Maybe it would be positioned together with the fixture or something. Okay, great. then maybe you have something to poof, to eject the part, you know. So you don't even need to worry about grabbing the part after that, putting it somewhere else, right? So you, what you do is, as much as possible, you free up people's hands, and you decompose the work they're doing, and whatever you can remove from their assignment, their, you know, their repetitive routine, you remove it by having the equipment take care of it, right? So that's semi-automation. And that's why earlier I said you can really go gradually with it, one step at a time. As I said, you know, you break down the routine and then you go one by one, you know, okay, what can we do for that? Okay, let's do that. And then let's see how it's going now. Okay, the next one we're going to do is this. Okay, and people learn to work with that. And over time, you set up these little extra bells and whistles, and the engineers, the maintenance staff and so on learn how to work with that. That's safe. And over time, you can really save so much labor. It's amazing. Okay. Mm.
That's interesting, because when we talked earlier about almost evolving into a lot of heavy automation too quickly, it's almost as if the humans in the factory, the staff, can't catch up with the technology. So what you're suggesting now is a much more gradual evolution, where you're supplementing your operators with different processes or with some semi-automation, and that gets a lot more out of those humans and reduces your costs in that way instead.
Totally. Yeah, right. And the mistake people are doing again is that they want to jump to high-tech automation, you know, complex stuff, everything controlled, and especially the one thing that's very often causing a lot of issues is when the part has to be automatically recognized, you know, often with a camera, you know, optically or through some other ways. Okay, the part is coming. We have to grab it and we have to position it in a certain way. That is much more complex. And that is very prone to, you know, being blocked. And then the whole equipment, which now costs maybe millions, is blocked, is jammed. Yeah, it's like a copy machine that gets jammed, right? So copy machines, you know, always work with... let's say A4 paper and everything, and even they get jammed. So imagine in factories, this happens all the time. So, and then, you know, there's someone running to come and pick up the stuff and remove it and get things started again. That's a nightmare very often. That's a nightmare. So this is...
What's the cost per hour or even minute of that happening, you know?
Well, basically, you have zero production for the time that it takes to unjam it. And sometimes jamming is a nice way of putting it. I mean, copy machine, you open the thing, you pull the paper out and you start again. you know, sometimes if things are loaded the wrong way, they might break something. So the whole thing might be broken until replacement parts arrive and so on. I mean, it can be terrible.
We're looking at it through the lens of your own factory. You know, you've got a lot of control over what's going on and when. But if you're dealing with a supplier in China, Vietnam, India, other places in Southeast Asia, and they're suggesting to you that they want to bring in such automation, how do you handle that with them? Because now we've heard the risks, this might initially sound, oh, that sounds like good news, but in actual fact, it could cause a lot of trouble for your supply chain.
Well, see, if they do a pilot, that's reasonably enough, you know, isolated from the rest of production, so that if it really goes down, if it really causes issues, they will know about that, and they will not be reckless and go all in, basically. That's the thing. But it's also positive. I mean, it means they're investing in their facility. It means they're really positioning themselves for the future. I mean, it's, you know, let's be positive.
Okay, so let's end by summarizing your suggestions on the process that can be followed to actually implement automation into a factory in a smooth way that's not going to lead to an enormous amount of upheaval and additional costs.
Sure. So first, before you think of a tool, you know, of a solution, think of what really is your problem. If you have a lot of waste in your current manual operations, then maybe you need to address that. And maybe you need to change your HR policy before you do that, before, you know, maybe you need to change a lot of things. First, you know, assess your situation, see what you need to do. Don't jump straight to, okay, here's a solution, whether I have the problem or not, right? Then I'm pretty sure there's a lot of waste in the operation. So re-engineer the current process, try to remove the waste. There's a lot of tools about that that are very well known. People usually talk about them as lean manufacturing tools and things like that. I mean, it's lean manufacturing is much wider, but that's what people have in mind. Try to go with one piece flow, try to have, you know, some good tooling and fixtures, train the people in the, you know, the best way that's known, and get them to get involved if possible in defining the better methods and things like that. Okay, that's great. Now, there's no escaping the reality that over time you will have to go in direction of automation. Okay, I'm not saying that automation is bad, definitely not. I'm saying that it's often a mistake to go too fast. But you should probably start now and get to train your people. Now, you go with semi-automation. You break down the routine of the people, what they're doing, and you, one step at a time, you say, okay, how can we address that so that this, you know, this action basically no longer needs to be taken by the operator, right? And at the same time, you make sure that your maintenance staff is really working on it and learning. Okay, and if you have, let's say, 10 different lines making the same thing, you can go with a pilot line to learn, but you have to make sure that the pilot line has been running for a while before you duplicate it on the other lines, right? People also, automation, I would close with that. Automation is not just robots, right? I was reading an article by Michel Baudin. He made a great point about that. There's only about 100,000 industrial robots sold per year. Now, the one thing that handles most of the automation in factories is the PLCs, programmable logic controllers. And how many PLCs PLCs and PLC peripherals are sold every year? About 50 million units per year, you know, versus 100,000 robots. So everybody thinks of the robots, but the PLCs are what really can be programmed to control some of the equipment to do this, to do that. Now, it might not look like a physical arm going to grab something and put it somewhere else and blah, blah, blah. But the reality of most manufacturing operations is that it's not robot arms that are needed. It's other kinds of automation, right? So don't think of robots when you hear automation.
I know, interesting.
There's a lot of people, you know, showing the robot arms, like the big ABB orange robot arms, you know, grabbing the cars, the body of the car, and bringing it here for welding and so on. Yeah, that's great, but it's not that common, you know. It's not that common. Either that or the other side, you know, the little Epson super precise robot arms is the same idea. Same idea. This is this can be used for assembly, but most of the potential in manufacturing for automation is through some other approaches to automation.
Okay, good. So that's a very, very methodical and maybe sort of more patient process to follow to bring in automation. Mm-hmm. And I guess following that, it does make a lot of sense when we're talking about investing all of this money to go step by step rather than rushing into it. That makes a lot of sense to me. Okay, great. Lovely. That's a brilliant view into process automation then. Thanks for sharing that, Renaud.
Hey, cool. Yeah. Thanks, Adrian.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from. See you next time.